Friendships are measured in different ways. We may have hundreds of acquaintances. We have childhood pals and colleagues at work. But the friendships we cherish most are fewer in number. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his brand new series on the fruit of the Spirit. And in this study, he's addressing a virtue that takes our friendships to the highest and rarest level. Can you guess which one it is? It's the glue that held David and Jonathan's friendship together. Chuck titled today's message, The Bond Between Close Friends.
Paul wrote to the Romans and told them, whatever was written in earlier times was written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort from the scriptures might have hope. When he wrote that, there was only the Old Testament, really portions of the Old Testament available to people in that era. And so he was referring to sections just like the one we will be looking at today. This passage we're looking at in 1 Samuel chapters 18, 19, and 20 are written for our learning, that through an understanding of them, we might have renewed hope. We're thinking about the fruit of the Spirit in this series, and we've come to the seventh in the cluster that he calls the fruit, singular. All nine are in that cluster, and the seventh is faithfulness, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. Next time will be gentleness, and then finally, self-control. I've chosen a passage in 1 Samuel 18 because of the example of Jonathan and David during a very critical time in David's preparation for becoming king, a time of testing when he and Jonathan became faithful friends with one another. Please turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel 18. I'll read excerpts there and then a couple of verses from 19, and we'll end with a couple more from chapter 20. I'll be reading from the New Living Translation as you follow along in the version you have with you. 1 Samuel 18 begins, after David had finished talking with Saul, he met Jonathan, the king's son. There was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. From that day on, Saul kept David with him and wouldn't let him return home. And Jonathan made a solemn pact with David because he loved him as he loved his own soul. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe and giving it to David, together with his tunic, sword, bow, and belt. Chapter 19, beginning again at the very first verse. Saul now urged his servants and his son Jonathan to assassinate David. But Jonathan, because of his strong affection for David, told him what his father was planning. Tomorrow morning, he warned him, you must find a hiding place out in the fields. And then verses 41 and 42 of the next chapter. 1 Samuel 20, 41. As soon as the boy was gone, David came out from where he had been hiding near the stone pile. Then David bowed three times to Jonathan with his face to the ground. Both of them were in tears as they embraced each other and said goodbye, especially David. At last, Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for we have sworn loyalty to each other in the Lord's name. The Lord is the witness of a bond between us and our children forever." Then David left, and Jonathan returned to the town. There's something beautiful about a faithful friendship we find such as this between David and Jonathan. I hope you have in your life at least one. We do not have many close friends throughout our lives, but most places where we live, we find that there is one or two, sometimes as many as three, who really endear themselves to us, and they become friends for life.
You're listening to Insight for Living. Did you know about the spiral-bound workbooks for our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies? To dig deeper into the fruit of the Spirit on your own, you can purchase a workbook today by going to insight.org/workbooks. And now the message from Chuck called The Bond Between Close Friends.
Of all the great character traits, probably there is none more important than faithfulness. If you're single and you're searching for just the right lifelong partner to share your life with the rest of your years, you often begin by looking for someone who would be faithful, faithful to the end, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness or in health, faithfully there, year after year. If you've ever begun a ministry and you are looking for those who might serve alongside you, who would be the beginning of a staff of people that would serve the cause of Christ in that community, you often search for someone who will be faithful when times are easy and when times are tough, when things go well and when they are not going well. Faithfulness holds their feet to the fire. And especially when life gets sideways and you feel alone for whatever reason, there's nothing like a faithful friend to help you through that period of time that you can't quite make it on your own. Cynthia and I were having coffee together again this morning, and we talked briefly about our 60 years in ministry and the different places we have served. And I said to her, when you stop to think about it, at each one of those places of service, at each church we've served, there has been one or two, sometime three, rarely more than three individuals who have proven themselves to be faithful friends. We even named them as we named the churches where we had served. Made us smile to remember their lives. Some of them have gone on to glory. Others still live. And they still are friends of ours as we think back to that place of ministry. When I think of faithfulness, I think of three words: reliability, loyalty, consistency. A faithful friend is reliable. You can count on them. They're not what we often refer to as fair weather friends or people who come along when times are good. But being reliable, you can lean on them. You can be confident they'll be there. And they are loyal, loyal to you. Whether you're present or absent, they're in your corner. They speak well of you. They're loyal in that they'll tell you the truth. They're there for you. And don't you love it that they're consistent? They're not fickle. They're not moody. Just as they were yesterday, they will be today and tomorrow and from then on, still right there. Jeremiah wrote a book titled Lamentations. It's a sad book. It's a book when he looked over the recent past and realized that his beloved Jerusalem was in ruins. And as he walks through the ruins, he laments the loss. And he does it chapter after chapter. It's a 5-chapter book. Right in the center, however, there is a ray of hope. And you may have forgotten that he's the one who wrote these words. Listen to them. The Lord's loving kindnesses never cease, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. And then the climax, great is his faithfulness. Don't miss the nevers. A loving kindness that never ceases. Compassion that never fails. And all of that is new every morning. There it is again. Loyally, consistently, faithfully there. This tells us that there is one dimension of faithfulness that's vertical. That would be the Lord's faithfulness. He's there for us. You can awaken at 1 a.m. and call on him, and he hears your call. He hears your cry. You can be at the very bottom and ask for help. David did that. I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He lifted me up out of an horrible pit and set my feet on a rock. Or you could be at the height of excitement and celebration and joy and give him praise. And he's there to hear your praises. Vertical faithfulness. You can count on the Lord to be there. Even when others fail you, he will not fail. His loving kindnesses never cease. Never cease. He is always compassionate. Always. Great is his faithfulness. Now, when you come to the fruit of the Spirit, this would be horizontal faithfulness. That's why he puts it in the list of love, joy, peace, and patience, kindness and goodness, gentleness and self-control. These are horizontal traits found in the lives of others, as well as hopefully in ourselves. Faithfulness that is seen and proven over the years. People who are there for us and with us. Even when we can't return their kindness, they're there to show kindness, to be there for us, to help us in the midst of what we find ourselves going through. All of this brings us to the wonderful story between David and Jonathan. All the attention of 1 Samuel has come to a climax in chapter 17. As David has come on the scene and has killed the giant Goliath. Saul didn't stand up to him, even though he was head and shoulders above his peers. No one in his army would take on Goliath. But here comes this unknown shepherd boy from the obscure hills of Bethlehem. And he looks out across the valley of Elah and he sees the giant and he doesn't hesitate. He takes him on and you know the story. He kills him. What's interesting is while he is holding the head of Goliath in his hand, I guess he's got him by the hair and he's cut his head off and he's walking away from the scene, Saul calls for him to come that he might meet him. And so David shows up, it says in the scriptures, with the head of Goliath still in his hand. In his first conversation with the king, he's got the head of Goliath swinging by him as a result of his killing the giant. And Saul says to him, who are you? Where are you from? David answers in all honesty and humility, I'm from the family of Jesse, and we live in Bethlehem. That's all he says. Listening to this conversation, however, is the son of Saul, the king. The son's name is Jonathan. He sees a heroism in this young David. David's still a teenager, no doubt a little younger than Jonathan, but a heroism not even his own father had. He sees a humility in him. He doesn't expect anything in return. He doesn't look for any reward. He comes from the beheading of the giant, and he talks to the father, and Saul asks him where he's from. He just simply says, we're from Bethlehem. And Jonathan sees a humility in David that wasn't in his father. He sees a greatness in this young man that wasn't in his father. And we read right out of the chute of 1 Samuel 18, Jonathan loved David. There was an affection for him right away. Remember, Jonathan is the prince. He will be, all things considered, he will be the next king. But there in David is a threat to the throne. I mean, if anyone deserved to become the king, it was this young shepherd boy when he grew up. But Jonathan isn't at all threatened by David. He's attracted to him, which tells you something of Jonathan. There is a bond between them. They will become lifelong friends, though Jonathan's life would not be long on the earth. He would die in battle. By the end of the book of 1 Samuel, he dies in this battle alongside his father and his brother. But here, Jonathan looks with affection onto David and thinks, what a man. I'd love to be a friend to him. And this begins the bond that never ends. In fact, I find in this story four characteristics of a faithful friendship that are demonstrated between Jonathan and David. I want to point out to you. But as soon as he saw David and heard him speak, there was this connection. Before I go any further, let me add this. There are times that people come along in our lives unexpectedly. A bond is formed. We call it a kindred spirit. There's a closeness. Oh, there may be other people around, but there's something about that one individual that draws you to her or to him. So it was with Jonathan and David. Jonathan saw in David qualities that were admirable, probably qualities he longed for in his own life. And he even formed a pact with David because he loved David as he loved his own soul. I love it that in the scriptures we come across scenes like this that are so much like life today. Friendships didn't end with the Jonathan-David story. They really are illustrated by their friendship, their closeness. Most of us have a number of casual acquaintances, people we're with from time to time, and it's often a pleasant time with them. They come and go. Later on, we're sometimes unable even to remember their names. But on a few occasions through life, along comes a kindred spirit. You have a oneness of soul. You may be very different. Think how different Jonathan and David were. Jonathan is being reared in a palace, the king's palace. David is a distant son of his father. There are other brothers, all of them older. And when Samuel came looking for the possible king who would be anointed by Samuel, he had to ask Jesse, are these all your sons? And Jesse said, well, no, I do have one more. And he's keeping the sheep. Well, call him in, says Samuel. He's even on the outside of the close relationship in the family. But here's David who shows up, kills the giant, and instantly there is a bond between Jonathan and David. Now, I mentioned four characteristics. Let me point them out. Will you notice, as we just read for you those first four verses, that the first thing Jonathan does when he gets with David, at least the first thing recorded, he takes off his robe, he removes his tunic, gives both to David. Since Saul is not going to let him return to his home, he's going to need those for his comfort. And then if you read on, he gives him his bow, he gives him his sword, he gives him his belt, all to protect himself in the days to come. So here's the first of the characteristics. A faithful friend voluntarily sacrifices for the one who is close to.
We've only had time to discuss the first characteristics of faithfulness. So please stay with us because there's much more to discover in this friendship between David and Jonathan. You're listening to Insight for Living. Chuck Swindoll titled today's message, The Bond Between Close Friends. You know, we're living in a day when genuine friendships are rare. Even though we're connected through smartphones and social media, technology really falls short of satisfying the human heart. We long for deep human connection. If you're prepared to learn more about faithfulness and the other eight virtues that Paul cites in Galatians chapter 5, we invite you to begin to explore these topics on your own. To help you, Insight for Living has prepared a workbook for our study on the fruit of the Spirit. It's part of our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies, and this spiral-bound workbook is designed to lay flat on your table so you can jot down any personal notes and observations. It's also a great choice to use in your small group Bible study. To purchase a copy today, go to insight.org/workbooks or call us at 800-772-8888. The succession of leadership, or the transfer of one's legacy to the next generation, isn't a new topic. The Bible is filled with colorful illustrations about mentors and their successors. And Chuck wrote a brand new booklet on this topic. It's called How to Follow a Giant. In his booklet, Chuck presents an intensely personal message about mentors and their proteges. And using the Bible as his guide, Chuck provides practical counsel for both leaders and those who succeed them. We're pleased to offer it to you today, so request your copy of Chuck's booklet, How to Follow a Giant, when you give a donation to support the ministry of Insight for Living. You can do that in a letter addressed to us at Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. Or give us a call at 800-772-8888. You can also give your donation and request the booklet by going to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Chuck Swindoll continues his message about David and Jonathan called The Bond Between Close Friends, Friday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, The Bond Between Close Friends, was copyrighted in 2023 and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.